I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. Republican and Democratic lawmakers in Harrisburg are unhappy with Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett. On Friday, he signed an agreement with the British firm Camelot Global Services to manage the Pennsylvania lottery. Yesterday, members of the Corbett administration and executives from the company faced some tough questions from the Senate Finance Committee. Camelot was the sole bidder and promised more revenue for the state by adding games and increasing the number of players. The union that represents lottery employees is suing and said they had a better plan to increase revenue for the Pennsylvania lottery. Today on Radio Times, what privatizing the management of the lottery means for the state of Pennsylvania. We have several guests who have joined us. I should say we asked the Corbett administration to supply a guest to us to talk about this deal, and Brian Duke, head of the Pennsylvania Department of Aging, was scheduled to join us this morning, but he canceled. We do have, though, Victor Matheson, associate professor of economics at College of the Holy Cross, where he specializes in sports economics, including the economics of lotteries and gambling. And Victor Matheson, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Well, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Also with us is John Misek, State House reporter for the Allentown Morning Call, writes the paper's Capital Ideas blog. And John Misek, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty.
So how angry are lawmakers at Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett?
Judging by the length of yesterday's hearing, about 3 hours worth of angry. There are lots and lots of pointed questions, particularly from legislative Democrats, who have complained about the timing of this announcement. This was a classic 5:30 p.m. news drop last Friday evening. You know, most of us are ready to getting ready to go home for the weekend when the administration announced that it signed what is known as a notice of award with Camelot to turn the day-to-day management of the lottery over to them. A formal contract, I should note, is expected to be signed sometime later this week. But there were plenty of questions yesterday about the timing of the announcement, whether it was politically motivated, the fate of the 230-some-odd lottery employees, what's going to become of them, how Camelot plans to expand the base of players when, you know, there's competition from casinos and horse tracks.
Well, I know there were hearings scheduled for this week on this proposal. Did the governor sort of preempt what the hearings and legislators were going to talk about?
The barn door was slammed pretty firmly closed, making yesterday's hearing pretty much an afterthought. I mean, it was probably the one significant chance that lawmakers will have to vet the proposal. The administration has asserted that it has the authority to move ahead with the management agreement without seeking legislative authorization. So, I mean, it was a token gesture in a lot of ways.
Were voices raised?
There were some fairly icy tones. There weren't raised voices, but there were some icy tones.
Let me go to you, Victor Matheson. Our understanding is that Camelot Global Services was the sole bidder in Pennsylvania. What should we take away from that?
Well, you can take either two things of that. First of all, you could take that this was a sweetheart deal where you only had one bidder coming in and therefore the state got taken. Or you could go the other way and say, well, the governor put together such a strict deal that only one bidder was willing to come forward under the onerous terms put forth by the governor. So you could really play that either way. Just seeing the fact that there's one bidder does not necessarily mean that the state got taken.
When will we know that, or will we ever know that?
Well, so the real issue in these things is, will Camelot be able to generate revenues that significantly increase the revenues that the public administered lottery has been able to generate over the last couple decades?
Let me go back to you, John Misek, and just to remind our audience that the lottery pays for services for senior citizens in Pennsylvania.
That's correct. Anything from Meals on Wheels to the state's PACE and PACENET prescription drug programs. There are even some programs within the Department of Transportation for shared rides. And services to protect against what's known as financial exploitation, where, you know, a relative may misappropriate, or somebody close to a senior may misappropriate or wrongly use money that's been set aside for that person. Marty, I should add that the administration revealed the identities yesterday of two other companies that were initially going to bid on the lottery and then dropped out, finding the terms too restrictive. There's the, I believe, called the Task Group out of Australia, and Geotech from Rhode Island, which has done some work for the state in the past.
Do you know those groups, Victor?
Yeah, so Geotech is one of the people who operates the privatized lottery in Illinois, and we'll be happy to talk about their experience. Illinois privatized their lottery about 2 years ago under a group called Northstar, which is partially owned by GTEC. GTEC and Camelot have had some rocky relationships over the last 20 years as well. In fact, the one major scandal of Camelot, Camelot almost was not re-awarded the UK lottery contract because of problems with gaming machines that were provided by GTEC about 10 years ago.
Going back to you, John Micek, as it stands now and under the current system which we've had for several decades, the state, at least in the last couple of years, has been making about about $1 billion off the lottery?
That's correct. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the arguments here that why farm this out when it's already a profitable enterprise? But the fact of the matter is the casino revenues have been eating into lottery sales in those parts of the state where there are slot halls. And there's also, you know, the aging department, Mr. Duke, if he had been here, would have probably argued that the expanding state's senior population, there's been a greater demand for services and not as much revenue to keep up with that demand. So they're now looking for a more predictable revenue source. Camelot says it can wring about $34 billion in profits over the life of a 20-year management agreement.
And how would they do that?
The line that was repeated often yesterday was, rather than having a few people play a lot, they want to have a lot of people play a little bit. So expanding lottery sales to include internet sales, to include keno terminals in bars and taverns, and to draw in what they've described as lapsed players, people who play the lottery occasionally but don't play it faithfully. They want to try to reach that population.
Through what, new games, new ways
through
of playing games,
through,
easier
through,
access?
Exactly, through sales, through marketing. Camelot described themselves really as a sales and marketing company yesterday whose product happens to be lottery tickets. And they repeated that line several times to lawmakers yesterday as they stressed, you know, again, through new games, through better prize pools, through Keno, through internet sales, trying to expand the base of players. They were met with a fair degree of skepticism there. Some lawmakers suggested there might just be cultural differences between the United States and England. There's something like 72% of the adult population in England plays the lottery annually. 50% of the adult population plays it weekly. That stacks up to about 10 to 30% of the adult population in Pennsylvania, so they do have their work cut out for them.
Indeed. And I'd like to have you speak to that, Victor Matheson. Why do so many people in Britain play the lottery?
Well, first of all, there's much less cultural aversion to gaming and gambling in the UK than in the United States. For example, sports gambling is available at essentially every street corner. You have a bookie, a legal bookie that is willing to take bets in all sorts of things. So that's one issue. That being said, it's important to put the Pennsylvania lottery in context. Currently, in Pennsylvania, there's about $250 of lottery tickets sold per year per person in the state. That generates about $75 of government revenue per person in the state. That puts Pennsylvania's lottery in the top 10 in the country in terms of the amount of money it generates per unit of population. And their administrative expenses are in the bottom 10 of states across the country. So they run a lottery in Pennsylvania currently under the public administration that is successful in terms of generating revenues and successful in terms of keeping expenses down.
Which is something, I read something like 2% of expenses for administrative costs. Does that sound about right, Victor?
Yeah, that's about ballpark. It depends kind of what you count as administrative expenses. And remember, administrative expenses can include things like advertising, which are an expense, sure, but are also done to generate additional lottery sales as well.
But when you talk about, the dollars per people, we're only, though, talking about a minority of people in Pennsylvania who actually do play the lottery on a regular basis, Victor.
Right. So one of the criticisms of the lottery is that it preys particularly upon low-income individuals. So especially when you're talking about issues like scratch tickets, once you get those Powerball lotteries that we saw a couple weeks ago, remember up to, what, $500, $600 million, that really is something that appeals to a very broad group of the population. So, you know, everyone gets into the lottery once it hits that $500 million mark. But the regular daily players tend to be drawn from a lower population, lower income populations, and so you really have a highly regressive tax system if you trying to generate a lot of revenue from the lottery.
And John, going back to you, the idea I was reading in preparation for today's program is to have Keno perhaps in bars and restaurants, more online lottery ticket sales as a way to increase revenue, I guess, and increase the pool of people playing the lottery?
That's correct. You know, the Camelot folks spoke at great length about that, and lawmakers, we're skeptical, I mean, given the sort of culturally conservative political culture of this state, about turning every bar and restaurant or turning every corner bodega into you know, sort of a miniature gambling parlor by putting a Keno terminal in there. But again, if Camelot, as Camelot argued, if they hope to increase their population of people who are playing the games, this is one of the ways they're going to do it.
Well, we know that the union had a proposal. What happened to that union? And I should say that we'll be talking with the executive director of Council 13 in a couple of minutes. But from your perspective, John, what happened to the union's proposal?
It went pretty well nowhere at all. You know, there was an extension. The Corbyn administration originally had until December 31st to make a decision on Camelot's bid proposal. They sought an extension so that the union would have time to submit its proposal. That was extended to last Thursday. Mm-hmm. The union got its proposal in. They claimed they could raise about 10% more than what Camelot was claiming in its proposal. It seemed like a pro forma exercise. It was a part of state law that the administration had to abide by. But it seemed like the decision was made for Camelot well in advance.
And we'll be talking with the head of the union, but it looked as if they were offering, in many ways, what Camelot was offering, but saying to keep it in the state.
Exactly right. One of the big questions here is what's going to become of the lottery employees. About 70 are going to stay on the state payroll. There's going to be sort of a one-year transition period from when it is Camelot finally takes management, probably in the first week of July, to make determinations on which current employees will be moved into the new operation, and some of whom may be let go. AFSCME has about 170 unionized members over at the lottery out of the 230 employees, so there's a great deal of concern about what's going to happen to those folks.
Now, the new attorney general has to sign off on this, doesn't she?
That's right. Kathleen Kane, the Democratic attorney general, who coincidentally, by the way, takes office at 2 p.m. this afternoon. As soon as the administration signs the contracts, presumably on Friday, it'll go to now Attorney General Kane, who will have 30 days to review the legality of it and then return it to the administration.
And we have to say goodbye to you, John, in about 30 seconds or so, but Governor Corbett has said that he wanted to privatize the LCB, the lottery. Why did the lottery come first?
It is the easier lift. He doesn't actually have to ask lawmakers to do anything. They've been trying since the Ridge years to try to privatize the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board to no avail. This was an administrative action. He didn't actually need the legislature for anything.
So even though there are threats of lawsuits and a lot of grumbling and criticism, he's on firm legal ground?
He claims to be on firm legal ground. I mean, what this is really a matter of political convenience. He needs not to round up the votes to privatize the lottery. And keep in mind, we're not actually privatizing the lottery, just the day-to-day management. Ownership of the agency by law will remain with the state.
Well, John Micek, as always, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Hey, thanks a lot, Marty.
And he's a State House reporter for the Allentown Morning Call, writes the paper's Capital Ideas blog. Victor Matheson staying with us as we continue our conversation, talking about privatizing the management of the Pennsylvania Lottery. We want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. What do you make of this? Give us a call. We'll be right back.
Is your child struggling in school? Supporting WHYY, Delaware Valley Friends, a Quaker College preparatory school in Paoli for students who learn differently. Delaware Valley Friends is committed to providing small classes, individual attention, state-of-the-art technology, and an accredited curriculum and faculty for grades 6 through 12. Open house on Wednesday morning, January 16th from 9 to 11 a.m. More information about Delaware Valley Friends at dvfs.org. Still considering applications for mid-year transfer students.
During WHYY's last on-air campaign, members helped to buy back a half day from the drive. Wouldn't it be great to buy back a full day or more? For every 750 donations received by January 30th, we'll start the drive one day later. That's fewer pledge breaks and more news and information. Make your donation to support the WHYY buyback at whyy.org/support.
If your New Year's resolution is to save more and spend less, here's a tip.
There really is a best time to buy just about everything, and there's also a best time to do just about anything.
We hear from the author of Buy Shoes on Wednesday and tweet at 4. That's next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. Just to recap, late Friday afternoon, the Corbett administration announced that it had issued a notice of award to the UK's Camelot Group to run the Commonwealth's lottery. Camelot, the only bidder on the contract, promised over its 20-year contract that it would provide the state with $34 billion in profits by adding games like Keno, expanding the number of retailers, and enticing new players to buy lottery tickets. So do you play the lottery? And would you play if you could do it at a bar or restaurant or online? Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. And we are continuing our conversation with Victor Matheson, Associate Professor of Economics at the College of Holy Cross. He specializes in sports economics, including the economics of lotteries and gambling. To you, Victor Matheson, and Pennsylvania not only has this lottery, but we've also instituted a number of casinos in this state. Is this more and more the way government is going to be making money, by enticing their residents, their taxpayers, to go gamble?
Well, sure. You're in a very anti-tax environment, particularly in a state like Pennsylvania, dominated by Republicans in your state house. And so you're always looking for ways to generate revenue for government services without raising, I don't know if you call them real taxes, but you can have the legislatures can say, look, we're selling goods and services like the lottery, and that doesn't count as a tax increase in the same way that raising, you know, the gas tax or the sales tax or property taxes would be.
I mean, they say that, and they can say that, but I'm not saying it's a tax, but it ends up, I think, being a kind of weird de facto tax.
Well, there's no doubt that it's a tax. Some economists call the lottery a tax on people who are bad at math, because you certainly are generating a lot of money by people buying the lottery tickets. And of every lottery ticket you buy, 30 cents of that lottery ticket is going directly into government coffers.
Now, Pennsylvania is the third state after Illinois and Indiana, and you had mentioned one of those states earlier. Is it too soon to tell whether this privatization has worked or not?
Well, we don't know anything about Indiana. This is something that's just been going on for about 6 months, but we do have the first year of results back from Illinois. Illinois was privatized a year and a half ago. The company there is a company called North Star, which is a consortium owned by a variety of other gaming companies, including one called G-Star, which is in the mix to maybe buy the service, bid on the services for New Jersey's lottery there across the border there. And North Star promised that it would generate $825 million in net revenue. So after paying the prizes and for the retailers and administrative expenses, they were going to generate $825 million in their first year for the Illinois lottery. They ended up generating about $775 million, so they ran about $50 million short. That being said, they also came in with record lottery revenues. So mixed bag there in Illinois, but I guess the main thing to take from that is just because you privatize something doesn't necessarily mean that that's some sort of silver bullet that solves all of your problems. You have lots of state lotteries run very efficiently and generating significant revenues being run by the government. So just because it's run by the government doesn't mean that it's being run inefficiently, and it doesn't mean a private company can automatically, just by the magic of the marketplace, come in and generate significantly higher revenues.
But would it be fair to say that as the lottery stands in Pennsylvania, it's pretty well run?
So as of right now, what you see is Pennsylvania generates in the top 10 of lotteries in the United States, and there are 43 states with a lottery, so they're in the top 10 in terms of amount of revenue generated per person in the state, and they're in the bottom 10 in the administrative expenses that they incur while running their lottery. So by some objective measures, Pennsylvania runs a very efficient lottery that generates more revenue than most lotteries around the country.
Now, Camelot is about to enter this 20-year contract, and they are promising the state something like like $34 billion in profits. Can a company make those kinds of promises looking ahead two decades?
Well, you can always promise, right?
You can always promise, exactly.
The real key is how well the contract is written from the Pennsylvania state standpoint. So, for example, the Illinois contract was written such that if they don't meet their targets, the North Star was required to pay penalties back to the state. But the contract is written with quite a few loopholes, so even though the company ended up $50 million short, it looks like they're only going to end up paying penalties of $3 or $4 million in penalties for being $50 million short. So this is a case where the state didn't protect themselves very well, and North Star said, well, it wasn't our fault we didn't meet our goals, and therefore, you know, we don't bear any of the burden from having not met the goals that we were supposed to meet. If Pennsylvania writes a stricter contract that doesn't allow as many loopholes, you can effectively transfer the risk from the state to Camelot, and the state could end up being better off and have more secure lottery revenues.
And going to Illinois, did they lay off union employees when they privatized the management of their lottery?
I don't know, but perhaps your next guest will know a little better what happened to employees. Certainly, you still need local employees to run the operations. The question is whether those employees are going to have benefits and wages that are anything like what they had as state employees before the takeover.
Well, we are talking about the Corbett administration's announcement that it wants to privatize the Pennsylvania lottery. Victor Matheson, associate professor of economics at the College of the Holy Cross. He specializes in sports economics, including the economics of lotteries and gambling. Joining us now is David Filman, and he's executive director of Council 13 of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, which represents Pennsylvania's state lottery workers. They oppose privatization, have offered a counterproposal on the management of the lottery, which was shot down. And David Filman, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty.
Were you surprised that the Corbett administration made this announcement late Friday afternoon?
Not surprised terribly. This had been on a fast track and in a secretive fast track for quite a few months. And unfortunately, we were told after the employees got an email at 4:45 Friday afternoon, and most of them left at 4 o'clock. So really, we've had a problem with the transparency of this process since the very beginning.
But what do you think is, and it looks like it's going to go through? I know that you're suing to prevent it, and others have some criticisms of this proposal. But what do you think it will mean for the employees, the union employees, part of Council 13?
Well, to answer one of your questions about Illinois, did privatize, as Victor indicated, with North Star. All of the employees continue to be state employees. There was no break in service. There was no change of whatever. The only change in Illinois was at the very top. For us in Pennsylvania with the Camelot Group, that proposal has not been crossed the table at all to us. We have 175 unionized members. There's 220 total employees, that would be management and union, that are part of the lottery system. Pennsylvania Lottery has been in place since 1971. So for 42 years, all the folks over there have been doing a great job. At this point, Camelot has only indicated that they are going to need some employees to stay on. As federal law indicates, you can't hand the entire keys to the operation over to a private firm. You have to keep the core management, the core operation within the state, and that seems to be a number of about 70 people. We're not sure who those 70 people are. Are they management people? Are they union people? Is there a mix? And at this point, the only proposal Camelot has given to the state and to us is that these employees could interview for their jobs, but there's no guarantee at all.
I was reading in the papers a billboard in Harrisburg, I believe a billboard that your union put up, and I'm quoting here, it's a billboard skewering the British firm as the sole bidder for the lottery, and apparently has a picture of a caricature of a pig in a suit with a Union Jack on its label holding a vacuum cleaner that's sucking dollar bills out of an elderly woman's purse. Is that your billboard?
That is our billboard, and obviously it's a graphic depiction of the fact that a foreign company will be taking profits out of a program, the only state in the nation, Pennsylvania's lottery, where all the proceeds go to senior programs.
Let me get you back into the conversation, Victor Matheson. Is this unusual to have a British firm that's the sole bidder and lobbying to run a state lottery here in Pennsylvania?
Well, certainly it's unusual in the United States. Again, in the U.S., of the 43 state lotteries, all of them except for Indiana and Illinois are run by the states themselves. We've only privatized now two of them, and that's recently. Now, mind you, there are not that many companies around the world who actually manage public lotteries, so the fact that one of the companies that is bidding for this is a foreign company, that in and of itself is not a surprise, again, because we don't have much experience in the United States with private management of state lotteries.
David Filmon, let me go back to you, then we'll get to some callers. I do want to get them in on the conversation, but I know the union offered an alternative to privatization. What was your offer?
Well, if you take everything that Camelot is going to have the opportunity to do, our numbers are either exactly there or beating them. And I'll give you a couple examples.
Go ahead.
They've talked yesterday in the Senate hearing about a big part of their proposal has to do with Keno. Keno does not exist in Pennsylvania. It is a bingo-like game in states like Maryland and New York, where you have usually at a bar, tavern, where you can watch a TV and you pick numbers, sort of like a Powerball, and those numbers come down on certain frequencies, sometimes 4 or 5 minutes at a time, every cycle, and you bid on that or bet on that, and you know, if you win, you win some stash of money if you get all the numbers. Since it's not in Pennsylvania right now, the basis for our lawsuit is that Keno is a slot machine type of a game. It's video terminal based. As are the casino games, the slot machines in the casinos. And if you go to the casinos in Pennsylvania, there are Keno games in there. Not a lot, but just a couple of them. So that's the basis for a lawsuit. But if it's deemed legal, we have the ability to do it amongst the current employees. So if we were given that opportunity, which we aren't, but Camelot is, we think we could bring in those millions of dollars extra. The second part is a very integral part of Camelot's proposal, has to deal with the minimums that are paid to the senior programs. Currently, the minimums are 27% of the proceeds have to go to senior programs. It dropped down back in 2010, 2009, because the economy had tanked. It used to be 30%. It is now scheduled to go up to 30% in 2015, which is all well and good. Camelot's proposal says that the legislature, along with the Commonwealth, should stop the increase to 30%, so it stays at 27%, so their numbers appear bigger as they go forward into 2015 and beyond. So just those two areas, and I could talk about the guarantee they have for the escrow, but those two areas are critical. If we had the opportunity to do this, our numbers look a lot better.
Well, let me give Victor Matheson a chance to respond to that. What are your thoughts?
If you can meet higher targets, that is all well and good for the state of Pennsylvania. It is certainly not clear that Camelot will be able to meet those targets. The key is how well is that contract written that if they miss these targets, will they really be on the hook for that, or will you have a situation like in Illinois where the targets were missed by about $50 million, and that is money that is lost to the state? And remember, they're going to Camelot's going to put in about $150 million in escrow. We have the experience in of Northstar in Illinois that's already missed that in their first year by about $50 million. An escrow can disappear fairly quickly if you don't meet those targets.
Well, let me get some callers in at 1-888-477-9499. We are talking about some of the pros and cons of privatizing the Pennsylvania lottery, something that Governor Corbett wants to do. And we're taking calls again at 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me see what Nancy from Lafayette Hill has to say. Nancy, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hello.
Hi.
I just have a lot of concerns. Everything I've read about this, the governor's proposal, it sounds like it's not really necessary, that they're doing well, they're making money, it's being managed well, and I always worry about people losing jobs.
Well, Nancy, let me... No, I hear you. Let me give David Filman a chance to respond, and I'm sure you share some of that concern, David.
Of course, losing jobs, 175 members on the line. But I guess the mantra we hear all the time is government should run more like a business. This lottery is coming out under these employees the best year ever, $1.01 billion in net revenue. And as I've heard already, operating costs about 2.3%. That is incredible. In fact, when you take all of that operating expense, which is advertising, brick-and-mortar offices, all the personnel costs, ours is cheaper than Camelot when they take their investment income and everything else they have to do to run the operation.
I'm curious, though, David, as you said, you're suing to prevent this. On what grounds, and do you think you have a chance at preventing this privatization going forward?
Well, the basis for the lawsuit is the Keno operation. In Illinois, they also have Keno along with their casinos, but they legislate. They voted to have Keno going. There was actually a vote in the House years ago about Keno, and it was voted down. Mm. Now the governor is taking the position under the 1971 Lottery Act. He has the ability to bring in a new game, and that's what he's calling the Keno operation, a new game. We're saying, no, this falls under the Casino Control Act, the Gaming Control Act, which is part of the casino operation, and he doesn't have the unilateral right to impose Keno. He has to go through the legislature.
Let me get to Sylvia from North Philadelphia to join us. Sylvia, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty.
Good morning.
And our guests. I'm just outraged once again by our governor. I'm a nurse living in North Philly, and so I see a lot of poor people playing the lottery, and so it's actually a tax on poor people and maybe people with gambling addictions. And instead of raising money in other ways that are better, is this just hurting poor people over and over again? It just makes me very upset.
Well, Sylvia, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Victor Matheson, are there concerns with a lottery, if you make it more and more available, that people could spend more than they can afford and even deal with problems of addiction?
Yeah, that's obviously a concern any time, and Sylvia is exactly right. All the evidence suggests that lotteries are an extremely regressive form of taxation. You see the poor play the lottery much more than the rich. In particular, the sort of gaming expansion that Camelot's talking about, the video lottery terminals or Keno, that is what some economists have called the lottery crack. That's the lottery that's highly addictive, designed specifically to appeal to lower income demographics, and that is something that's certainly a concern any time you're interested in expanding lottery to video lottery terminals and to bars.
Dave Filman, you want to weigh in on that as well? I know. I mean, sounds like it was part of the union's proposal too.
Yeah, I mean, we have actually in place an incentive program for our employees. It has been since the Rendell administration to go out and get more retail outlets involved, the mom-and-pop delis, more of the 7-Elevens, all over the state of Pennsylvania, and it's worked very well. As you see, we've had the banner year last year. Two things, and Victor is correct. Some of the private outfits and basically Camelot is saying they have to expand their base. In England, they can gamble at 16 years old. So obviously they have a pool of people that we don't have the ability to do there. So I think maybe their numbers may be inflated. But also, it's true. We found that the seniors and the lower income population are game players. And some of the private firms have looked to go near cash checking offices, set up some temporary shops, set up in some of the senior centers to build up on that base. And we think that may be the wrong thing to do.
Well, David Filman, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. He's Executive Director of Council 13 of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, representing Pennsylvania State Lottery Workers. And Victor Matheson staying with us for the rest of the hour. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Abington Health supports WHYY and offers a range of cancer treatment options, including new radiation therapies that fight rare and complex cancers. To learn more about their team approach to cancer care and to view patient stories, abingtonpowertoheal.org.
What's your job on the movie?
Producer.
Associate producer. What was the last movie you produced?
High and Dry.
Who paid for that?
CFDC.
What's your middle name? What's your middle name? What's your middle name?
Leon?
Shoot him. He's an American spy.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Ben Affleck. At the Golden Globe Sunday, his film Argo won for Best Film Drama, and he won for Best Director. Join us. this afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. In Mali, Islamic insurgents are gobbling up territory despite airstrikes against them by French warplanes. Also, the astonishing story of judges in Pennsylvania who sent kids to prison for cash kickbacks. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
PICO supports WHYY. The PICO Smart Business e-Audit is an online tool that analyzes and estimates business energy usage and provides customized recommendations to help manage energy consumption. Find more at pico.com/smartideas.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. Tom Corbett vowed to privatize the lottery when he ran for governor of Pennsylvania. On Friday, late in the afternoon, he came one step closer to keeping that promise when he issued a notice of award to a British company called Camelot Global Services to manage the Pennsylvania lottery. Lawmakers were not happy, voiced their criticisms yesterday at a hearing in Harrisburg. We're talking about some of the pros and cons of privatizing the management of the Pennsylvania lottery, and we want to hear from you. Do you play the lottery, and would you if it were more convenient and more available? Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. And again, Victor Matheson staying with us for the rest of the hour, Associate Professor of Economics at the College of the Holy Cross. He specializes in sports economics, including the economics of lotteries and gambling. And we do have calls coming in. I'd like to quote something, Victor, that I ran across in preparation for today's show. This is from Alex Kovach. He's Camelot's managing director, and I just thought it was such an interesting description of how they think of the lottery. He says, "We've adopted a strategy that considers the lottery like a can of Coke." I'll say that again. "We adopted a strategy that considers the lottery like a can of Coke, a consumer good, and you apply consumer good marketing to the lottery to get a wide group of people to play responsibly." Can you deconstruct that for us?
Well, again, what you're trying to do, the goal of having a lottery is to maximize revenues while minimizing any sort of social costs that you're imposing upon society. And, you know, we've talked about some of the bad things, that this is something that tends to prey on the poor more than the rich. But one of the good things, obviously, about the lottery is it's a voluntary tax. If you don't want to pay this tax, you don't have to. And if you enjoy playing the lottery, then you are both getting some enjoyment out of this and also simultaneously generating revenue in Pennsylvania for services for the elderly.
And when you look at the executives, let's say at Camelot or some of these other companies, are they well paid?
I don't know. That's not necessarily public information, but again, they'll be well-paid employees like anyone else. And, you know, if they do succeed in generating lots of additional government revenue for the state of Pennsylvania, then paying people well is worth the money.
Well, and we should say, and what the governor and others have said that support this idea, which is that, and Pennsylvania has a lot of old and older people, and a growing population of older people, so a growing need for the kinds of services that are funded by the lottery.
Well, sure. And, of course, that doesn't change whether you've got a private lottery or a public lottery. You have people demanding more and more government services all the time, and you got to figure out how to pay for them. And one good way to figure out how to pay for them is to figure out things like the lottery that people are willing to tax themselves in order to have a lottery in ways that they're not willing to do things like raise taxes on gasoline or raise income taxes or other things like that.
Let me see what Matt from Doylestown has to say. Matt, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Well, it's disappointing as a Republican to see that my own political party is so uninventive when planning for revenues. I know they're in such a tizzy, and they should be because of the possible $2.1 billion outlay just for, you know, the Medicaid expansion for Obamacare. So I know they're looking for new ways for revenue, but still, you look back and you see when they approved off-track betting years ago, I knew this was going to expand right towards this. Casinos, gambling, this is a vice, and we've made a devil's deal, a deal with the devil. So since we have, and you guys are spouting statistics and figures and things like that, I wondered if the figures that the union is claiming and the figures that the private vendor claiming account for the Do those bottom line figures include the net cost of savings for, you know, taking pensions away, healthcare benefits, all benefits? Is that part of the bottom line, of the savings?
Matt, let me see if Victor Matheson can respond to that, as much we don't know about this particular contract. But what do you think, Victor?
Well, so let's talk about a couple of things here. One question is whether gambling is a vice or not, and that's a matter really of opinion, right? You gamble every time you go to a movie. It may be great or it may be terrible. So one thing I've heard people say about the lottery is, you know, a dollar is a pretty small price to pay to dream about what you would do with $300 million. So in some ways, I'm more than happy to buy the Camelot line. That, you know, they're selling a consumer product, and it's something that people enjoy doing, and they're going to sell it just like anything else. That being said, you do have to worry about some of the social consequences of gambling, just like you need to worry about the social consequences of other things. So when they compare it to a can of Coke, we know that Michael Bloomberg, right, in New York City, has been talking about the social vice of Coca-Cola.
Exactly.
I don't know if that's better or worse than the social vice of gambling. In all of the things that I have seen, I have never seen any sort of – I don't think it's clear at this point what's exactly going to happen to the employees at the Pennsylvania Lottery. I would certainly be concerned if I was David, who was on earlier talking about the union. And if you're going to drop a bunch of jobs for Pennsylvania people in order to generate profits for a British firm, that's probably a bad deal for the state of Pennsylvania.
Thanks for the call to Radio Times. I know that Camelot actually helped to fund some of the London Olympics, and I'm assuming if they're managing the lottery, they're paid to do this. In fact, I think they're paid about 0.75% more than what it costs today. And I'm assuming they can use that money in whatever way they wish.
Yeah, so the UK lottery is set up just like the Pennsylvania lottery, where a portion of lottery proceeds are directed towards what are called good works in the UK. In Pennsylvania, you designate it for the elderly. As David said earlier, this is the only state where the proceeds are dedicated specifically to programs for the elderly. Lots of states in the U.S. dedicate it towards education as well as just general funds. In the UK, 12% of the money goes into general state revenue, and 28% of the funds go into what are called good works. Good works include sporting venues. So, yeah, indeed, Camelot paid for a bunch of the Olympics venues. But that's what their charge is. Just like in Pennsylvania, they will be providing a bunch of money for that. Of course, that's exactly what would have happened if it was run by a public firm. The question is whether that extra 0.75% that's being skimmed off for profits for Camelot, whether Camelot's going to be so good at doing this, so much better than the state, that they're going to be able to generate well more than that 0.75% in terms of additional revenues to the state.
And when do you think we might know that? Obviously, it takes a couple of years to get up and running.
Yeah, so what an interesting economic experiment will be over the next half decade or decade is to see whether growth rates and lottery revenues are higher in states that have privatized their lotteries and in states that haven't. We have 1 year of data, which isn't really data. That's more like anecdote, right? But our 1 year of data is that North Star did increase lottery revenues significantly in Illinois, however, far less than they promised, and not necessarily any better than, for example, their next-door neighbor, Iowa, that is still a public lottery like all the rest in the United States. And Iowa's lottery profits went up even more than Illinois' did. Again, a recovering economy has led to people having a little more money in their pocket when they go to that convenience store.
Let's see what Robert from Orland has to say. And Robert, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thanks. Right to that point about Illinois, their neighbor didn't hire this firm. Illinois did. And it sounds like a jump from about $100 million in revenue, somewhere between $75 and $100 million jump in revenue in 1 year, it's probably a pretty good result. I'd also ask that, you know, we consider the ingenuity a private firm might bring to the lottery and making it available on our phones or much easier ways in getting in our cars and burning fuel to go to a 7-Eleven somewhere to buy a ticket. And lastly, I'd like to implore your show to please have a diversity of opinions on this. It seems like every show there's just everyone's on the same side of an issue.
And Robert, I have a question for you before you leave. Do you play the lottery?
Not much. Only occasionally, a couple times a year for birthday presents and things like that.
Fair enough. And let me say that we did invite, in fact, we extended an invitation to anyone from the Corbett administration to join us on Radio Times. We had a guest booked, and they canceled early this morning. So that's in response to your criticism of our guest. And I have to say that we talked with John Misick, who's a journalist covering this issue, and I think you can hear from Victor Matheson, he sees some of the pros and the cons of privatizing the Pennsylvania lottery. Victor, anything you want to add to what Robert was saying?
Well, I think Robert is right. The question is, in the Illinois case, is the glass half full or is it half empty? They did not meet the targets they promised, and they will not be required to pay significant penalties for not meeting those targets. On the other hand, they also had record revenues this year. That being said, Iowa next door and Pennsylvania, where we're talking now, both also had record profits last year. So the question and. With a publicly run company here. So the question is, how much better is a private company going to be? There's no doubt that there is some magic of the marketplace, and economists definitely agree with that, and that's why that's why the governor would think about privatizing this firm in the first place. The question is, how much more do you think you can get from a private firm, and is that worth the extra roughly $25 million as of now that Camelot will be skimming off the top as their profit.
But even looking forward, and it looks like the whole world will be on our cell phones, and there will be an app for that. Is that the future, do you think, of lotteries as well?
Well, there certainly is the idea of expanding internet gaming is certainly on everyone's mind. In the U.S. right now, there are significant restrictions on being able to sell lottery tickets online and being able to gamble online. For example, there are all sorts of gambling products that you could go to right now, places like InTrade, and you could gamble in the U.K. on your computer. Unfortunately, as soon as you try to pay for that with a U.S. credit card, you're banned from doing that. So there's some real tension between state lotteries wanting to expand gaming online and U.S. law that is significantly restricts any sort of gambling online.
Let me get back to our callers at 1-888-477-9499. Looks like we have Lynn joining us from Princeton. And Lynn, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
I feel like there's not enough discussion of what seems to me the principal reason not to do this, and that is that by inserting a middleman, you necessarily are giving away a chunk of a stream of revenue. And the first thing that everyone should say to themselves is that it doesn't make any sense to do that. I mean, there's various ways in which the middleman is going to take it, and there's various reasons why the state would do it, but none of them are good reasons. One way in which it works is that a person running the state sells a future stream of revenue in order to get more money today. Another way it could work is if they decide to axe union workers and take on people who are paid a lot less. A third way is that they could alter the odds in such a way that you're much less likely to win the lottery, and that is how the company gets their money. But none of these things are good things for the state and the people of the state. And so, while it might be true that there are other reasons as well, that seems to me the principal reason not to do it.
Well, fair enough. Lynn, thanks for the call to Radio Times. A critic, Victor Matheson.
Well, so Lynn makes some good points. There's no doubt that you are inserting a middleman here, and the middleman, by the contract, very specifically, Camelot is allowed to take 0.75% of every dollar of lottery tickets they sell and keep that as profit. So the question is whether having a private operator that's got profit motivations and incentives to increase revenues, whether they can inject enough innovation to make that middleman worth it. I don't know whether they can or not. They've got a pretty tall order since Pennsylvania already has a fairly well-managed and profitable lottery. But the question is, can the magic of giving people incentives, this profit incentive, is that worth adding that additional layer of profit that gets skimmed off?
Lynn, thanks for the call. Let's get one more caller on. Looks like we have Peter from Springfield joining us on Radio Times. And Peter, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, hi, Marty.
Hi there.
Thank you. Looks like Lynn beat me to it here. I'm a skeptical senior because it's so secretive. And I think of the New Jersey Easy Pass situation where big promises were made, but it seemed to fall flat in the end. What I was curious is maybe your guest can address where the money trail goes and who gets paid to set this deal up. Is it a commission, an agent, a broker, an official, a campaign fund? Who's the middleman here who stands to benefit just by putting this deal together?
Peter, it's a good Thank question. Let me see if Victor Matheson can take that. I know that, not surprisingly, Camelot had lobbyists in Harrisburg pushing this proposal.
Yeah, there's no doubt, and the people putting this deal together stand to make money from this. So there is no doubt that there are some people getting rich from this, both from putting the original deal together, and of course Camelot is going to benefit from being able to make this, take this piece of the pie the whole time. Again, the real question facing the state is, can the magic of the marketplace increase the revenues generated by the Pennsylvania Lottery enough to be able to cover these additional expenses that you have from, like Lynn said, a middleman? And the other issue is the contract written between the state and Camelot sufficient such that if Camelot doesn't meet its lofty projections, that they will pay significant penalties for that, and it won't be if things go well, Camelot gets rich, and if things go poorly, Pennsylvania gets stuck with the bag.
Do you think other states will be watching then Pennsylvania and Camelot and see what happens?
Yeah, there's certainly no doubt that, this is on the radar of every state lottery association in the United States. If things go well, and you do have significant efficiency gains, and these folks really do have good experience in administration and marketing, and if they are able to show that their experience and innovation in marketing and administration is sufficient to be willing to pay some extra money to have them come in and operate this, then it's a good thing. On the other hand, if they are in a situation where they charge a lot for very little in additional gain, then Pennsylvania signed a 20-year deal that they would have been better off simply giving incentives to their own public lottery to provide those same sort of innovations.
Well, I appreciate the fact that you joined us today in Radio Times. Victor Matheson, thanks very much.
Marty, it's been my pleasure to be here.
And nice to have you with us. He's Associate Professor of Economics at College of the Holy Cross, where he specializes in sports economics, including the economics of lotteries and gambling. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times to find out more about this program. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. Stay with us, though. We'll be right back.